Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's still funny, it's fun, it nicely builds the themes from the first film, and in many ways I think brings a maturity to it that you wouldn't expect from a kids' film.
I do believe, to my core, that Shrek 2 has one of the greatest sequences of visual storytelling ever committed to film.
And what's that one?
That is the I Need a Hero sequence. The tightness of very efficient storytelling. Four or five or six different moments where character arcs and beats are paid off in this moment, and it's very satisfying. And it's all set to a wonderful score.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flix Watch a Podcast. Today I'm joined by Liz.
Hello.
Zach.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we are Shrekly Ever After, or Shrek 2, or yeah, we're doing Shrek 2.
Thank you as always to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flix Watch a Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Zach and Liz. If you could please say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello. Well, I'm Liz Campbell, and this is my good friend Zach.
Hello.
And yes, we're here today not just to talk about fun movies, but also because there's a new podcast series coming out that is designed by Zach and
designed by.
Well, it's hard to. It's an actual play podcast. It's hard to. It's not written by Zach. It's kind of, you know, encouraged and babied and kind of like, you know,
I love this.
Brought forth from the from
guys,
the darkness.
If you can see Zach is like melting. He's like,
I want more people to describe actual play podcasts as being gently lulled into submission.
Yeah, just like kind of, well, just like coaxed into reality.
It's an actual play show, which is basically improv storytelling with a game system.
I was going to ask, so I'm glad you pulled that in there, guys. So explain what that means, actually.
So basically, I am on our first campaign. If you know anything about games like Dungeons and Dragons, it's kind of like that. I run the game and I'm the quote unquote storyteller, but really everything's run by the players at the table who get to make all of the fun, wacky decisions in the fantastical fantasy world that we find ourselves in. And Liz plays the wonderful Zongroff Graalshak, a orc who is a member of the local guard who stumbles into some precarious situations. Can you tell us a bit about Zongroff, Liz?
Well, in the first campaign, which launches on the 18th of August, 2021, it's a fantasy mystery going through a city trying to stop the end of the world. And it's a real good time. So check that out.
I know a couple of, another player, Maddie Searle, who I'm working with on another couple of podcasts.
Yes.
She's wonderful. Maddie Searle is also in it, who you'll know from shows like Stella Firma, The Prick Willow Papers. She plays a wonderful necromancer, very awkward student. And the show features just a bevy of wonderful guest players who've been on this show before, from Felix Trench and has Beth Eyre been on here before?
Beth Eyre's
been on here. So pretty Beth much everyone Eyre from Wooden Overcoats, which is
basically the Wooden Overcoats cast, who you'll know, and just a bunch of other wonderful voices from the audio drama scene, can be found in Realms of Peril and Glory, the name of the show.
Probably should have mentioned that at the top. I feel like we forgot. Sorry, I dropped the ball on that one.
I think that's fine. I mean, you guys are returning guests. Before you came on for Cabin in the Woods and also Life of Brian.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for rejoining us. Hopefully, the show is that the experience wasn't too traumatic for you last time.
We loved it. We talk about it all the time. We do.
It was a lovely time.
And today we're talking about Shrek, which is your choice, Zach. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it, and then I'll get the stopwatch. This has changed since you last turned up. I'm going to set a countdown timer. You have literally less than 60 seconds to tell us the synopsis. So first of all, why did you choose it?
Well, the reason I chose Shrek 2 and not Shrek 1, which feels like it might be the decision to make, go for the first one, I feel like Shrek 2 is in every way a superior film to Shrek 1. It elevates the themes of Shrek 1, and it takes them further and makes them funnier, makes them more relatable, and it's wonderful. Overall, I think it's a film I'm very nostalgic of from my childhood. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, to this day, it still stands up as a very funny and entertaining film, and I think that's worth discussing.
Okay, and your timer starts now.
Shrek 2 is about, of course, the titular Shrek, who's married the beautiful Princess Fiona. They both are ogres who live in a swamp, and they are summoned to the kingdom of Far, Far Away to meet the in-laws. And of course, everyone's expectations are not as they seem. The in-laws, of course, wish he was Prince Charming, and Shrek, of course, wishes that he were anywhere but here, and in that comedy ensues. You have the wonderfully villainous Jennifer Saunders as the fairy godmother in pursuit of toxic perfection, and altogether it comes together into a wonderful take on the fantasy and fairy tale genre that I would highly recommend you check out. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There we go.
Well done. Well done. So, yeah. Liz, what are your thoughts on Shrek 2?
I like Shrek 2. Good film.
Okay, Helen.
That's a quote for the poster.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I can say more about Shrek 2, and probably will, because we got some time to kill on this podcast. But at the end of the day, really, it's just a film I watch and go, that's a nice film. That's a nice film.
Yeah.
I think it's still funny. It's fun. I agree with Zach that it really nicely builds the themes from the first film. And in many ways, I think kind of brings a maturity to it that you wouldn't expect from what's essentially a kid's film. You know, the end of the first film leaves us off kind of saying, well, you know, open your heart to someone and you can be accepted. You know, it would be tempting to leave Shrek in a kind of place where all of his problems seem solved. And I think it is actually quite an interesting thing for the second movie to be like, oh, no, actually, he thinks that he solved his problems. But that insecurity that's, you know, been with him his whole life stays with you, you know, even if you have found a person and facing the world's a different thing. I think it's good film. Yeah, it's a good film.
And I did note this time it's a universal to you, which I didn't realize the first time watching it. And I think it does. The themes in there are quite a lot more adult, and it's where you can see that this kind of animation, Pixar, DreamWorks specifically, they do try and walk that tightrope between adult friendly and kid friendly at the same time. But interesting themes. Helen, what are your thoughts on Shrek 2, and or Shrek in general?
I have seen the first Shrek once, and that's kind of my
knowledge, experience.
It's one of those films where it's not for me. I think it's somewhere between if you've listened to the episodes that we've had on Stardust and A Princess Bride, they're not my thing. And I think this would fall into a similar kind of genre. But I also think I have kind of limited time for films that are mostly made up of stealing bits from other films. I kind of like the message that Liz was talking about being in there, but for some reason, I just find Mike Myers in this and Donkey just really irritating. And Fiona, actually. I don't like any of the characters, which I think for me...
Not even Puss in Boots? Antonio Banderas' greatest role of all time?
The little eyes?
The little eyes.
As a cat person, Helen... You've got a cat which looks very similar to Puss in Boots, who will likely appear on screen at some point.
I have. And also it came with the great fact that apparently Antonio Banderas has many cats, which he studied for the role of Puss in Boots to ensure that he played it with authenticity, which
That's amazing. Can't
say that he didn't do a good cat.
I just have a mental image of him at home surrounded by cats wearing what I assume is like a low-cut blouson kind of in the wind, just being like,
his actual Zorro costume.
I assume there's always like a breeze wherever Antonio Banderas is, so he can just kind of, that's
making
great.
Little notes as he goes along.
Yeah.
Into a recorder. I'm going to study this for later.
Ah, yes, wet food, delicious. Oh no, furball.
So it's interesting you said that this was a film from your childhood, because I think for a lot of people who really love Shrek, like, it is one of those defining films, and to have kind of a character like Shrek, and there's what, like, four films?
They're making a fifth now, apparently.
They say that. We'll see.
I didn't know there was a fourth one till this watch, till I went on Netflix and went, why is there so many Shrekses?
Well, I suppose if you're counting like the shorts, there's more of them, because I think they did like holiday themed shorts as well.
DreamWorks has like one IP, okay? They need
so true.
To get their money's worth.
Hey, they've got How to Train Your Dragon. That's the best.
Valid.
I think what you're saying, Liz, about you went to the Netflix and were like, oh, there's so many more of these. It's kind of my experience with it, because I really enjoyed Shrek 1 when it first came out, and I enjoyed Shrek 2 when it first came out, and it's nostalgic to me. I watched it when traveling after university, and for some reason we're in Bangkok and we went to watch Shrek, which is a waste of.
So what you must do in Bangkok, of course.
Probably because it was aircon cinema or something. It was
probably
so hot.
I think it was like just that time of the day. We're like, okay, we've got 2 hours to kill. Let's go and do something. So I kind of associated with that. I haven't seen it since then, and that was like 20 years ago. And when Shrek 3 came out, I was like, you know, I think I'm done. and that's kind of, but I enjoyed it. And it's kind of like a humdrum film, I think. But I'm not sure I'm interested in watching any more Shrek films. And I don't know why that is.
They go downhill from here. So if you're already like, I think I'm on the edge with Shrek 2, don't go into Shrek 3.
Shrek 3. So I watched all of them in preparation for this.
Why, Liz? Liz, you do this all the time. You watched all of Marvel before Endgame.
I did. It was not worth it.
isn't that, I mean, that's surely acceptable before Endgame.
Well, this is
no,
it.
No, but like in quick succession.
that's true. Well, I say I watched all of them. I've actually got Shrek Forever After, the fourth one, on my TV right behind you guys. I'm 10 minutes to the end. I mean, I won't go into those ones because we're talking about Shrek 2, but yeah, I think you're fine stopping there. You're probably fine. Probably fine after 2.
They're based on books, right? Or is like some of them based on?
I think the
books
first one is based on a picture book, just a picture book.
Well, like the Snowman, like Raymond Briggs' Snowman.
Yeah, kind of along that line. It wasn't like based on like young adult novels or like actual prose. It's a storybook. It's not. It's not like there was a lore and mythos built out for them to pull on.
The ancient tomes of Shrek.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I read somewhere that actually the writers of Shrek, the first one, who obviously did very well for themselves, didn't want to come back for Shrek 2 because the pitch from the studio was basically the movie that was made, and they thought that was the wrong direction. They wanted to make something that was a lot closer to existing fairy tales. So it's basically new writers for Shrek 2. I mean, it's one of those films that has like, 12 writers kind of credited.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But
how can we make this funnier?
Shrek 2, whether you personally liked, it did quite well. So I'm sure those writers are kicking themselves in their own way.
I think this has kind of revitalized Mike Myers and Eddie Murphy's career at that point, which obviously they weren't like starved of cash, but at the same time, probably weren't doing much. And to be honest, I don't think they've been doing much recently either. I'll take that back. Eddie Murphy's been doing good stuff on Netflix with The Dolomite Is My Name and with Coming to America. So his star's rising-ish again. But those guys made a lot of money out of it. And I think he pushed Eddie Murphy in particular over the edge into one of the most highest paid actors like of all time, just from this series.
I find it really interesting with the careers of the people who are in this, who after they were in Shrek, just fucking vanished and didn't do shit like for ages afterwards, except Shrek. It's like Cameron Diaz, Mike Myers, and Eddie Murphy. It's like right at that time when Shrek got popular, like around Shrek 2, Shrek 3, that's when they stopped appearing in other stuff. You know, Eddie Murphy, huge, amazing. You know, you think about his comedy specials. He was getting into the family film business of stuff. And, you know, you think like Haunted Mansion was around that time, a big Disney film. And then like Shrek properly took over the zeitgeist and he just wasn't in that much after that point. Same with Mike Myers. It's like Love Guru was like probably between 2 and 3 of Shrek. And it's like, well, we're not going to go watch any more Mike Myers after Love Guru. And, you know, so, and it's same with Cameron Diaz. She didn't do too much huge stuff. It's kind of just after the peak of her career. And
I think Cameron Diaz is more, from what I understand, it's more her kind of decision to take a step away from the limelight a bit more.
She's practically retired, hasn't she? She hasn't done anything in years.
It's a cushy job to you know, do these things. You get to rock up to a voice booth, do some acting for a bit, and, you know, nobody has to do your hair and makeup. You don't have to worry about people going, oh, they've gotten a bit old or whatever on camera. Like, you can just
don't have
go
to get
and
your
mug
abs
in a booth.
Out.
Exactly. Which was Mike Myers' signature move anyway. So,
yes.
But, you know,
in Eddie Murphy and Mike Myers' case, oh, I've got to change into prosthetics to play my third character.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, the first time I watched it, I really enjoyed it. This time, I think I just knew it was diminishing returns, because I think the first time you watch it is the biggest impact. And I think had I watched it as a kid for the first time versus 24, 25, then it probably would be one of my favorite films. But I think the quality just isn't there, like with the earlier Pixars, for example, where I watched that 2024, I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And each time I watch it now, even though like Toy Story does look a bit dated, I'm still like, this is amazing. Whereas when I was watching it this time, apart from some of the bits of Puss in Boots, I was like, that's fine.
Puss in Boots, come on, man.
I mean, I just want to quickly say, and I'll come back to this later and let you continue what you're saying, Liz. I do completely agree with you. However,
sure,
I do believe to my core that Shrek 2 has one of the greatest sequences of visual storytelling ever committed to quote unquote film.
And what's that one?
That is the I Need a Hero sequence. The tightness of very efficient storytelling in that sequence is a pure delight. Like, the song is wonderful. It's an incredible rendition of the song by Jennifer Saunders. You follow like 3 or 4 like different beats and lines throughout. Moments of character arcs are paid off in shots in a very glorious way. If you could break, and I have, you could break this sequence down into just moments where like 4 or 5 or 6 different moments where character arcs and beats are paid off in this moment, and it's very satisfying for me. And it's all set to a wonderful score.
I
feel that the score is another thing that, particularly during this era, films were basically one long mixtape where occasionally there was just particularly no plot and it was just an excuse for a cover version or a song. And it feels a bit like this, like, please ever, never, ever do this to David Bowie. There's a particularly changes. Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
I like that.
I really like that. In fact, I will, you know, don't take our word for it. David Bowie liked that cover so much. He did the backup vocals to a cover of his own song by Butterfly Boucher. Is that right? Quite. I saw her open for Sarah McLachlan once in 2004, which is, you know, is a very 2004 comment right there. But I think the music's fantastic. I mean, I think in comparison to, you know, if you look at the Disney animation stuff, obviously there's a real drive to make musicals, so original songs. And this one does have some original songs, but I think that it has a really tight use of popular songs. You know, I think it's more than just, oh, we need to put a big band in here, that's fine. You know, everything kind of really does capture the mood of things. I think, you know, Accidentally in Love as the opening song, which is actually like a second choice song for them or something, but like that's such a, you know, I think that goes great with the montage and really captures the tone of the feeling of setting it up and things like that and changes. I can't even think of the names of the other ones, but yeah, no, I think the music, I like the music.
I agree.
I like the music.
Accidentally in Love was one of its two Oscar nominations, I believe.
Yeah. I think the reason that you find it, I mean, I'm just positing here. I think the reason that it is grating to you as the trope is because this is the starting point very much of that trope in a big way in popular culture. Obviously, you had some of it in Shrek 1, but really this is the film that really skyrocketed that. And then now every other animated film is like, we've got to end with a popular song and a dance number. Yeah. And I think that was done to death. But I do think in this film specifically, for me anyways, it felt deserved. It felt thought out. It wasn't as brutal as some of these other films that just shove in a popular song because it's popular.
Yeah, for example, taking completely off the wall one, Shrek 3, which does just have some songs in it that you might recognize why they're at that point in the movie. Who knows?
It's all big juggernaut, isn't it? It's the film, and it's the soundtrack, and then there's the toys, and then there's the theme park ride, and it all adds it to the obviously increasing the overall take of a film. Before we head to the scores, guys, where are we on DreamWorks versus Illumination versus Pixar, Disney versus Sony versus Cartoon Saloon? if a film from one of those studios was to come out tomorrow, which studio would make you the most excited to see it?
I mean, no. Yeah, I'm not enough of a connoisseur, but surely the correct answer is Pixar. Like, I feel like,
you won't be hunted down in the street for that answer.
You know? I know enough to know that people will throw tomatoes, you know, through a podcast if I say anything that's not Pixar.
I don't know. Helen and Zach, is that the correct answer for yourselves?
I mean, I guess Pixar would be the most bankable, although I don't know. Maybe I'm just becoming less of a target audience for these kind of films, that I am not in a place to sort of say this would be a driver for me to go to the cinema anymore. I can't remember the last Pixar film I saw at the cinema. It was a while ago. Maybe Toy Story 3.
Oh wow,
that was 11 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
I'm trying to think what
might have been Toy Story
that.
4 if it was more recent.
I haven't seen Toy Story 4. This is how sort of waning.
Incredibles 2?
If there's ever a day you just want to cry, I would sincerely just like, you know what I feel like doing today? Being really depressed.
Toy Story 4? Yeah.
I mean, most of the Toy Stories, really.
I was a little bit underwhelmed with Toy Story 3 and felt that the further I got into that, the more I was moving away from 1 and 2.
Toby's going to break.
You know, for me, it was one of the perfect trilogies that didn't need any 4. I mean, I enjoyed 4, but it didn't need to exist. But 3, for me, holy shit. Anyway, that's when
it's
one.
You can kind of see I'm maybe not the target audience. I thought Soul was okay.
So that's the last Pixar film you saw.
Yeah, but not at the cinema. So yeah. it has been a while.
Who goes to the
since
cinema anymore? Come on.
I do. I just went. I saw The Suicide Squad. It was very good. Thank you.
Okay.
I've been lots since. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, my tastes are just different. I'm just, how about you, Zach? Who's going to be the draw for the cinema for you?
For me, it is going to be Pixar. I just think Pixar has a better batting average. You know, there have been fewer films of theirs where they've kind of gone the lazy route. Whereas I think Illumination, DreamWorks, Sony, they've had more films that are just kind of like, Here is The Emoji Movie, a film that no one asked for and is designed purely to sell merchandise. You know, I think the laziest film Pixar has released is maybe Cars 2. And if that's, and if it's really that one or two films that they've released that are actually bad, not just like not for me, I would rather go see a Pixar film that feels like they've put the effort in, even if it's not for me, than something that's just cranked out for the sake of it.
I think that's what when you get the Despicable Me and the Minions movies, as much as I think that kind of falls under the Shrek banner for me. I'm like, I enjoy them. Do I want to see them again? I don't know. But for me, it's just based on the last two films, which are Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Mitchell's vs. Machines. It's Sony for me. If they said, there's a surprise Sony film coming out tomorrow, do you want to watch it? Like, yeah, I want to see exactly what you guys are doing, because you're making some interesting shit at the moment.
What I would say with that is I think what you're more after is the two directors behind that, the two producers is, their names?
Lord and Mitchell,
because I think it's their style more than anything that feeds those films. I think Sony Animation's done some real stinkers. Like, Sony Animation is my number zero on the list.
What's the stinkiest then? Because
Emoji Movie.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've not seen it, but I believe
Surprise, I've not seen that.
Yeah. No.
You know,
I had to work on the marketing campaign for that film. That was brutal.
That heavy few weeks
of work. Did you not just need to send out loads of emojis to people and just go, take your pick?
No, it was just watching the same TV spots over and over again in different languages. That's all I did for like 2 months.
Anyway, we digress. Let's head to the scores.
Yes.
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which coincidentally are on Netflix and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out. And when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
So welcome back to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are still out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Zach, with your recommendability.
Shrek 2 is an easy 5 out of 5. I can recommend this film very easily to many people. Yeah.
Well, Liz.
Yeah, I mean, I would go very high. I might do like 4.5 only because I do know there's some people who, wouldn't be their jam. But anyone with a little bit of joy in their soul, a little, whimsy for the good old days and animated donkeys.
You're trying to steer the scores here. Helen, do you have any whimsy or joy in your soul?
No joy in my soul, it would appear. My joy has all been removed.
Oh, no.
I am only here for heartbreak and death and sorrow.
Can I just say, this is tangential, but I need to share this with somebody because I've just watched Shrek 4. The plot of Shrek 4 is he has a midlife crisis and brings about an alternative dystopian universe where they have to bring about the revolution. So, maybe that's
that
the one
the
for
one
you,
for me. Maybe.
It's very weird. I didn't hate it, but my God, is it weird.
Maybe this wasn't weird enough for me, maybe.
There you go.
I mean, Letterboxd would agree that this is the best of the Shreks. I mean, it really, really, I really didn't get that much from it. I think if you have seen any of the other Shreks and enjoyed them, you will like them. I think if you're under 12, you'll probably think it's the best and you'll love the songs. I would find it difficult to see if kind of any adults who haven't had some kind of Shrek in their life come to it and find that much to it. So it's a 3.5 for me. If you love Shrek, you'll probably love this. If you don't, I'm not sure. I think maybe too much time has kind of passed between it coming out and now for it to have maybe felt maybe original as it did when it did come out, considering everything that's gone after it?
Yeah, I think I'm going to 4.2. I think if you haven't watched Shrek 2, then yeah, try it out. It's not that long a film. It's not that offensive. It's got some charming bits. It's got some generally laugh out loud funny bits. The whole donkey being a dick in, on the way to the far, far away does make me laugh with the... just reminded me of car journeys I had with my brothers, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think the kind of the spoofing of other fairy tale stories, that kind of where it lost me a bit more. But things like Puss in Boots is fantastic. So I'm going 4.2. Repeat viewing score, Zach.
Repeat viewing, regular repeat viewing, I'd say is probably around, I'm going to say overall for me, it's a 3.5. I can keep watching this film over and over again, but I'm kind of one of those weird people who will listen to the same song over and over and over and over again for hours, and that's fine. I think for general audiences, watch this once every few years if you like it, and you'll get your kicks from it. Or if you're me, just find the YouTube clip of the I Need a Hero scene and watch that about 5 times every 6 months, and your fix will be sorted.
Yeah. What kind of numbers are you in? How many times do you think you've seen it?
Oh, I couldn't. As an adult, probably around 5 or 6. As a child, many, many more.
Liz?
Yeah, I think I'd go 3 maybe, in that I have watched it a number of times. I'll probably watch it again in my life. What I thought was interesting is that I actually have a really terrible memory for everything, but films I've seen. And I can't remember when the last time I watched Shrek 2 was. I can't remember how many times I watched it. Terrible memory. But what was interesting is watching it, I remembered so much of it. Like I knew where everything was going. I knew the cadence of every joke in a comforting way kind of thing. So clearly it's a memorable movie. And, you know, I still wasn't bored. So I think, you know, you don't even have to rewatch it because it's just burnt into your mind.
So what was your score?
3.
Helen?
I mean, one thing it has got going for it is that it is only an hour and a half. So it's not like...
You love a short movie. You do love a short movie.
Trying to like stretch it out over 2.5 hours. I'm unlikely to watch this again. If someone was to pick Shrek 4 to come on Flicks Watcher, then obviously I would watch that.
But that's a different film, so that's not repeat viewing. This is
it's not 1.5. Never say never, but unlikely. I mean, I was confused. I was like, we've not had Shrek 1, I don't think, but let's go straight into Shrek 2.
I don't think we don't. It's fine. It's fine.
It does a beautiful recap at the beginning.
It's not the Two Towers. It's going straight into something that's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is it, 1.5, is it, Helen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 1. I'm not sure I will watch it again willingly. 20-odd years ago was fine. And yeah, I was like, this is good. This is good. Fine. Zach, small screen score.
Oh, it's very high. I feel like I'm skewing this results here. I think this film is better watched on the small screen than on the big screen. It is a film designed for children to be stuck in front of on a small screen and have a great time. Honestly, it is a better experience at home than in the cinema, I think. And so for that, I will give it, I would say, a 4.5, a 4.5. For sure.
Liz?
Yeah, I agree. I had the same thought. I think both in terms of rewatchability and small screen, like it's a kid's movie. It's meant to be on repeat on the TV forever and ever. 4.
Helen?
I wouldn't go to the cinema to see it. I can't really remember that much about Shrek, the first one, but I seem to think the animation is slightly better in this one. It's kind of like less... shit. I think it looked a lot.
It has aged right, hasn't it, the animation? I think Puss in Boots is okay, but Shrek was a bit...
Yeah,
they hadn't fully worked out skin.
Mm.
I think that's another thing that for me, it kind of lacked the attention to detail that you get in Pixar for things like fur and things like that, you know, like Ratatouille's fur. Like the first time I saw that, like my heart went. That didn't happen in this. So yeah, small screen, 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4.8. I saw it in the cinema. It was fine. Saw it on the TV. It was also fine. So yeah, 4.8.
Good. Yeah.
Engagement score, Zach.
Engagement. I might put it lower because I think it's a film you can float in and out of, and it's almost, again, a better experience when you do, and it's just kind of in the background, and you dip in at those vital moments, you have a great time. But then when it lulls a little bit, you can kind of drift away and go on your phone and play a little game and then come back. It's like, oh, they're breaking into the fairy godmother's thingy. I think probably two and a half.
Okay. Liz.
I was going to give it higher, but Zach's kind of talked me around. I think that's right.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, thing is, I think it is a short film and interesting. Like, you know, it doesn't like linger on anything where you're going, oh my God, this could only be over yet. But I agree that also, yeah, you don't have to like pay attention to all of it. So no. Three.
Helen.
Well, I was going to give it a 2.5, but now that kind of seems like I should maybe have gone lower. But it's 2.5. It's one of those that you don't need to pay that much attention to. I kind of got sucked into reading some pretty kind of like weird out there Letterboxd reviews with people who were like really into Shrek and stuff. And then it's kind of pulled back when there's kind of a big song moment. So, yes, I'm in the 2.5 gang.
2.5 gang?
We're a gang now.
I'm gonna whack 2.5. I think it's one of those films. It's I think it does. If you have a moment to, if you're watching it and you can give it a bit more attention, it is a bit layered. There's a lot of stuff going on, especially like your fairy tales and stuff. But also there's that layer where you can just kind of throw it on and dance around your flat. It's not dance around your flat because I don't think music's that good. But just do stuff around your flat and just have it on in the background, and that gives us an overall score of 3.406.
That's fairly decent, though.
Yeah, of course, it's not a bad film.
Toby, are you? I can't tell if you're deliberately giving it like the 0.8 just to rile Helen. Is this an ongoing bit that I've missed?
Helen's buckled now.
I've made peace with it now.
Good. Gotcha.
I understand the system. I know how it works.
Amazing.
So do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcher, and the main reason to follow us is because we do put a little shout out before we go into record asking for your opinions. And it goes a little something like, we're reviewing Shrek 2 with Zach FG and Liz X Campbell from Realms Pod. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. And today we got one response from, Zach, do you want to read it out?
Lee Thomas says, it's at Lee Thomas 5. Some good gags and references in this one. Plus, the soundtrack is superb. Bowie, Eels, Nick Cave, Tom Waits. Watched it with my 5-year-old recently, and she loved it. 4 stars from the Thomas family. Pretty good review, I think.
I think if you're watching with Litlin, then you might live vicariously through them. But otherwise, as an adult, no.
That's so brutal. Or if you are a little one like Liz and I.
Yeah. Perpetually 5 years old.
We are the ones coming on from a podcast with a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, do remind us of your podcast, guys. Tell us everyone where you can find it online, and then we'll say goodbye to the listeners.
Yeah. So you can head over basically any social media platform, find Realms Pod, RealmsPod, and in your podcatcher of choice, you can find Realms of Peril and Glory. It is a fun actual play podcast where myself and some wonderful players tell a thrilling, epic mystery story about averting the end of the world in a fantasy city. It is really quite funny, actually. And if you enjoyed listening to us today, don't worry. There is plenty of Liz and myself in that podcast. And if you didn't enjoy listening to us today, don't worry. There's also other people in the show.
Well, thanks very much, guys. And if you are listening to this after the 18th of August, then just head over to Realms Pod now on your podcast of choice, which is this one, whichever one you listen to, and listen and subscribe to them. Thanks very much, guys. It's been a pleasure to have you back on once again.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us. Bye.
Bye. enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast, why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.